そう、クオリティさんだ。
Okay, good evening everyone. Welcome to this Kingborough Council meeting on Monday the 27th of July 2020, and it's 5:30pm, and so I will now officially declare the meeting open. My name's Dean Winter, I'm the Mayor of Kingborough, and I'm delighted to welcome everyone who's watching at home on Facebook. We are, I think, one of the first councils to come back to a meeting back in chambers, which we're very happy about, but we'll be even happier when we can welcome you back into our audience as well, which we hope will be soon. But in the meantime, you are getting the benefit of our live stream from home, and I hope you're enjoying that and can follow along with the agenda, which is also available on our website. To let everyone know that not only is this council meeting recorded on Facebook with video, we also record the audio, and there is a copy that's made available on our website. And just to check, could the General Manager please confirm that the audio recording has commenced?
Confirmed.
And that has been confirmed. I'd now like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet. And I begin tonight by paying our Council's respect to the traditional and original custodians of this land, the Muwinina people. I acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continue to maintain and fight for their identity, culture and Indigenous rights. With me this evening we have Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass and Councillor Reet. From our staff this evening we have our General Manager, Gary Arnold, our Executive Manager of Governance and Community Services, Daniel Smee. We have our Manager of Development Services, Tasha Tyler Moore, our Communications and Engagement Advisor, Sarah Wilcox, our Customer Service Coordinator, Kelly Nichols, our IT Officer is Aaron Theodore, our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton, and later this evening we'll be joined by Mr. Tim Jones, who is our Finance Manager. Apologies this evening, we have Councillor Grace, who has a personal matter to attend to tonight and sends his apologies. Confirmation of minutes. I'm looking for someone to move and second a motion that the minutes of the open session of Council meeting number 13 held on 13 July 2020 be confirmed as a true record. What's moved by Councillor Reet and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against, motion is carried unanimously. Next item is the workshops held since the last council meeting, and there have been none. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest to declare in relation to tonight's meeting? Councillor Fox, your light's on. Councillor Bastone.
I have at times had dealings with Channel Construction, but I won't be leaving the room.
Thank you. That's in relation to the DA 2020 134, yes, which is at 13.2, and Councillor Bastone has indicated an interest. Are there any other interests to declare this evening? No. There being none, we'll move on. Transfer of agenda items. Does any councillor wish to transfer an agenda item this evening? There are no issues with the agenda. The next item is questions without notice from the public. As I've been saying since we went into COVID-19 mode with these, normally we would have a public gallery with people asking questions without notice. Obviously we can't have that at the moment, so if you're at home and you've got a question you'd like to ask, the best thing to do is to email kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au and put your question on notice, and that will make sure that it goes on our agenda for the next council meeting and you'll get a clear and concise answer to your question. Our next item is questions on notice from the public, and we have a question from Rosalie Maynard on our Skyline policy on page 2. On page 3 we have a question about Council's Environment Fund from Rosalie Maynard, and on page 4 we have a question about the Alum Cliffs track from Lindsay Rosa, and a response there as well. We now move to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Start with Councillor Bastone and then we'll move to Councillor Fox next.
Thank you, Mayor. This is in the activities for the Hub, events held at the Hub. There is a list of events that were held right through until the 19th of March, then events cancelled due to COVID-19. My question is, how many events were cancelled because of the repair works that were being done to the concrete around the Hub?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, it's a difficult question to answer because there's probably a number of bookings that we didn't actually take because of the planned work. So we were mindful of the fact that this work was planned, so we probably didn't take bookings. So I'm not aware that we actually had to cancel any bookings, but certainly had COVID not eventuated, these works would have necessitated either us not taking bookings or having to cancel bookings. But to my knowledge, we didn't actually have to cancel any.
Councillor Fox and then Councillor Westwood will be next.
Thank you, Mayor. I've got two questions. The first one relates to the Mayor's communications. The visit from Tobias Ten Bensel, as referred to on page 78, the Kingborough and Huon Rural Youth Representative, asking for council collaboration. I'm just wondering if you could elaborate on the basis that he visited me before speaking to you, and I'm just wondering what he's ended up asking for.
Thanks for your question, Councillor Fox. And he mentioned that you recommended he came in to see me, which was great. Tobias and I had a good chat over about an hour, and one of the issues he raised was around some signs that they were hoping to put up on roadsides to increase understanding of their activities. And as part of that, I asked our head of planning to get in touch with the organisation about the signs so they could better understand what the process was. I also talked about the fact that as a community organisation they could apply for the usual costs associated with putting a DA in to be waived. Of course, they would have to go to the general manager. The second thing I did was to talk to him about how I thought West Winds and his group could coordinate, given that West Winds is in a regional location and the work they do increasingly with young people. And I sent him and the coordinator there at West Winds an email, and hopefully we're working to get on, hoping that as a result of that they'll start collaborating. And the third thing we discussed was how they could better interact with our youth services team, and I've suggested to our youth services team that it would be a good idea to have a chat, and the response I got from them was that they were enthusiastic about doing that, so I also hope that's happened in the meantime as well.
And the second question is relating to the memorial furniture in public open space as listed on page 84, Governance and Community Services Act report. Does council have a policy on memorial furniture in public open space? I'm aware that there is some here and there, but it's never in my memory come to council. I'm just wondering if we have a policy and whether we need a policy.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, Councillor Fox, your memory is spot on. We don't have a policy. We do need a policy, and our urban design officer is working on that at the moment. He's keen to do some community engagement around what the parameters of that policy might look like, and that's scheduled to commence shortly, and then we'll be bringing a policy for council's consideration.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I have some questions in relation to the upcoming green waste collection service. I'm aware that bins have been rolled out across the municipality over the last couple of weeks. I'm just wondering if council has had any notable number of residents ringing up to request that their bin not be delivered.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for the question, Councillor Westwood. Yes, we have. In fact, we've had a number of residents both opt in and opt out. In the first week of the rollout, we had about 170 opt out. That number is now around the 300 mark. But in recent days, the number of opt-ins has been gradually increasing, and that's currently sitting around the 80 mark.
Thank you. And do you expect that the $64 fee for for this financial year will still adequately cover the cost of council providing that service?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. At this stage, Councillor Westwood, we do. As you know, that fee for $64 is a pro rata fee, given that the service won't actually commence until the first week of October. But we're encouraged by the trend in the last few days of more opt-ins than opting out.
Thank you. And just one final question about the service commencing in early October. Is there some communication plan to let residents know when they can actually start putting their bins out?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The short answer is yes. Currently, the green waste rollout and information is available on our website, on our front page of our website, in fact. It's also being advertised on our Facebook page. But I do know that my colleagues, Mr. Baldwin and Mr. Reeve and Sarah Wilcox, are planning more consultation as we get closer to the actual commencement date.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Just following up on those questions from Councillor Westwood about the green waste, I'm just wondering if the General Manager is aware that there seems to... I'm wondering how widespread the problem was, but I noticed on social media, I think it was last week or the week before, that there was some talk about that people should check their rates notices because people who had opted out of the green waste bins still had a fee on there, which then caused me to check mine, and the next day I then got an amended notice charging me for a bin that I'd opted out of, which then prompted me to ring, and I was told that there had been quite significant errors in amended notices being sent out after the bins had been delivered.
General Manager.
If you can follow that, strange. So I opted out back in January because I have a trash pack, and it originally wasn't on my rates notice. Bins were delivered and then I got an amended notice, and there seemed to be a bit of a theme on something I was reading on social media that people should check their notices because this was happening.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Root, yes, I was aware that there had been a hiccup, as often happens in any rollout. Similarly, we've also had a situation where in the first week of the rollout, a number of the people that had actually opted out notified us again that they were opting out, and that initially didn't attract too much of our attention, except that we then noticed the trend that you've just identified. I'm not too sure in terms of how significant that has been in terms of numbers, but I'm happy to take that on notice.
It might be something else that we might want to communicate to ratepayers, that they should just check, do they have a bin, and you know what was on their notice, and if they don't have a bin, to make sure it wasn't included, so that there aren't more people sort of being caught up in that. Thanks.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question in regards to the master plan at Huntingfield. Just wondering if we had any further updates regarding that.
The update that I gave at the last council meeting 2 weeks ago is the same situation that we're in now, which is that on the 2nd of July I wrote to the Minister accepting his request to meet with councillors, but reminding him that he had committed in writing to a public meeting and that COVID-19 restrictions would now allow us to do a public meeting. But as of today, 25 days later, we haven't received a response to that letter, so we're still unsure what the Minister's commitment to public meetings are at this stage.
Thank you, Mayor. Question, just in, a couple of questions in regards to the appendixes. The first one is regarding the review of bylaws. I'm just wondering, are we reviewing all of the bylaws or what part?
This is me.
Through you, Mayor, yes, we are reviewing all of our bylaws with the exception of the recently adopted CAT bylaw. So we have four bylaws that are all due to expire early next year, and that review process is well underway, and we'll be having a councillor workshop to go through the major proposed changes to those bylaws in a few weeks' time.
Thank you. One under the property management. It notes there's a discussion with landowners, walking track, Brightwater, Mount Lewis Road. Is that the one that links to the Tinderbox Hills track?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, that is correct.
And a question regarding the co-working space at the community hub. Recently I visited a co-working space in Hobart, and people working there stated that they actually looked at the Kingborough hub, but it didn't actually meet their requirements and was lacking quite a few facilities. So they drive to Hobart to go to a co-working space. I'm wondering if council staff have actually looked at other models of co-working hubs to improve and make Kingborough more attractive.
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, yes, the downtime that has presented us due to COVID has provided that opportunity to review the operations of our co-working space. We're aware that there's been a new one recently opened in Kingborough, and we have looked at the other models to see what works best in the current environment, and how we could improve our own co-working space going forward.
Thank you. And a further question in regards to the events and bookings at the community hub. It's fantastic to see that there is, that it was attracting a high number of interest and bookings, and it is a big shame due to COVID what has happened. I'm just wondering, are we open for business, and how are we promoting that to the community?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, we're not currently open for business. That's in part due to COVID restrictions, but primarily due to the repairs to the concrete works that are happening directly outside the hub. Those works are ongoing for at least another month. And again, we've taken the opportunity in this downtime to look at our marketing plan for the hub, and we need to start to implement that as soon as we're able to reopen.
Thank you.
Councillor Wass and then Councillor Street.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Just wanted some clarity around school buses, whether they are permitted to stop at on metro bus stops at present. The reason I ask is that there was an incident this afternoon at Margate where the school bus decided not to stop at the metro bus stop. It then went up and virtually stopped on the roundabout to let one student off, creating, if you like, a dangerous situation where cars were virtually forced onto that island to get past the bus.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Wass, we'll have to take that one on notice and make sure that a written response is provided.
Thank you. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question regarding the community grants program. I'm wondering when it's planned for applications to open for round one of that program this year, and when we would be planning on having those applications finalised.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, they normally open early in August, which is not far off, and then we normally have them finalised well before the end of the calendar year, round one. I've not spoken to our community development staff specifically about it recently, but certainly that's the normal practice, and I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be different.
Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, ma'am. A quick question about the delegated authority list on page 79. I noticed that there are two more retrospective approvals this meeting again, so DA 2014 and 87. I guess I'm just looking for a little bit more detail, and an indication of whether or not the proponents just didn't understand that they needed council approval, and maybe is that an indication that more education is required around that issue?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, I'm just trying to find which ones they are. I didn't have it prepared, but if I could just have a few moments, then I can look it up. A few more moments than waiting for me to look it up now on our records.
Anyone got any other questions? Councillor Cordova, the pressure's on you. You don't need to ask a question.
I have no more questions, Mayor.
I have a question that I can ask
Councillor
in this
Bastone,
time.
Yeah.
Several times I've asked questions about speed limits and speed limit signs, and the answer has been that they will look at it, and then nothing's come back. Is it my responsibility to go and check whether these signs have been put up, considering that one of them's on Bruny Island, or is it something that we should have our council officers getting back to us and saying, yes, it's been done, or no, it doesn't have to be done?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Bastone, there should be a closing of the loop at the very least. So if you have locations, and you've mentioned Bruny Island, but if you have locations that I can follow up on, I will make sure that loop is closed.
I have a question. Thanks, Mayor. On the weekend, I was having a chat to some community members, and the issue of fish farming in the channel came up on a couple of occasions. Just wondering if there's been an influx of concern being raised with council, particularly since the new well boats have arrived.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not aware, Councillor Cordova, of any heightened activity in that area. I will follow up, though, with my colleague, Mr. Duell, to see whether there is something that I'm not aware of that certainly hasn't passed my desk. Yeah.
Ms. Tollemore, you're welcome to take on notice, by the way.
I can do it.
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, the Semfly Road one appears to, the report suggests that the applicant, it was re-advertised because the applicant wanted to include an unauthorised outbuilding that had been constructed. So what happens occasionally is officers, when they visit the sites to do the site inspection, find other buildings or other works that are unauthorised, and I'd say that's what's happened in this instance, and it looks like the Cemetery Road one is also similar, that it was identified by officers that was a building without approval. So they then can add it into their planning application.
Thanks. Mayor, just another question about is there the feeling that there's need for more education, maybe on rates notices or something like that, so that this doesn't happen, or if it's not a big issue, then it's not a big issue. But
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, it's our intention through our enforcement to proactively promote compliance, and we can do that by illustrating some examples of non-compliance. We intend to do that. Resourcing limits our opportunity to do those extra things, and we also have details on planning permits that are issued that say you cannot make changes to your plans. If you want to make changes, you need to come back for an amendment, and we can also include things on our website, but again, resourcing limitations makes it hard to get to all those other projects that we'd like to do and promote. But I think probably the rates notice isn't the right place. It would just be a general media release.
Okay, there are no further questions, so we'll move on to questions on notice from councillors. On page 4, we've got a question from Councillor Street about the withdrawal of reports and the rules around that. Question 2 is from Councillor Cordova about weed control. That's on page 5. So the open session of Council is now adjourned, and the Planning Authority will commence at 5:54 p.m. And to remind all councillors that we are now sitting as a Planning Authority. First item is PSA 2020-2, which is amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme. There's a recommendation on page 11. Would anyone like to move that? Councillor Fox. Seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
This is a fairly straightforward matter. I think it's really just based on things that have been left out inadvertently from the planning scheme and as a translation error. And I think this is just to formalise that situation and to bring things back to how they should be. So I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Are there any other contributions on this? There being none, the motion was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Cordova. And the motion reads that A, Council notes the representation received from TAS Water, and B, pursuant to section 39.2A of the former provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, Council forward a copy of this report to the Tasmanian Planning Commission. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. We move on to page 17, which is DA 2020-134, which is a development application for new manufacturing workshop, office, car parking, showroom and landscaping at 1686 Channel Highway, Margate. There's a recommended motion on page 40. Would anyone like to move or second that? Councillor Fox would like to move. And seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to move that the development application for a new manufacturing workshop, office, car parking, showroom and landscaping at 1686 Channel Highway, Margate be refused on the following grounds. The application to extend a non-conforming manufacturing process and use on the site fails to satisfy the limitations of Clause 9.1.1 of the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme. It is also contrary to the and conflicts with the zone purpose statement of the local business zone. It will result in unreasonable adverse impacts on residential amenities of adjoining use and development through overshadowing, overlooking and visual impacts. The proposal fails to satisfy the performance criteria and it doesn't avoid impacts to an existing tree of high conservation value, which such impacts could have been avoided in a redesign of the development. It also fails to satisfy the performance criteria of, because parking has been provided forward of the building line in an instance where it is not the only feasible possibility, and the proposal fails to satisfy the performance criteria in that there are feasible alternative proposal designs which could be implemented to avoid impacting on the pin oak tree at the front of the site. The further to that, we have all received a correspondence from Ms. Tasha Tyler Moore, which I find quite concerning, because in that document, the letter, official letter from our senior planner, it states that in making this decision, it's relatively straightforward, albeit not favourable by the applicant. As we would know from the agenda report, the use manufacturing is prohibited in the local business zone. So, based on that, all the other non-compliance reasons for performance criteria, etc., not being able to comply, I can't see any possible reason that this council could do anything other than refuse this application. The wording of Clause 9.1.1 does not offer alternative performance criteria options if it doesn't meet the initial requirements. And if all three requirements are not met, as is stated in this officer report, the planning authority cannot approve an application or extend or move a non-conforming use from one part of the site to another. So, on that basis, I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. As Councillor Fox rightly points out, the primary consideration in this application is the question of whether a non-conforming use can be transferred from one part of the subject site to another, and that the relevant clause of the planning scheme is clause 9.1.1. This clause requires that the planning authority may approve the transfer of a non-conforming use to one part of a site to another where there is, and you're going to have to bear with me here, this is one of the beautiful parts of drafting in the scheme, the second occurring A in the clause, no detrimental impact on adjoining uses, or B, second occurring, the amenity of the locality, and C, second occurring, no substantial intensification of the use of any land, building or work exists. I see the question of substantial intensification of the use of any land, building or work as being the primary matter in issue here, and so I'll deal with that first. The officer's report correctly identifies, in my view, the RIMPAT decision of United Petroleum and West Tamar Council as being instructive on the question of what constitutes substantial intensification. I, however, differ in my interpretation of the Tribunal's reasoning in that decision and don't agree that it supports a determination that this application results in substantial intensification. On that matter, and it appears that this RIMPAT decision is the only authority on this question, the Tribunal said that in considering clause 9.1.1 A and B second occurring, given that they specifically address detrimental impacts on adjoining use and amenity of the locality, in the Tribunal's view, they don't form part of the question of whether substantial intensification occurs. The Tribunal said that for the intensification of the use to be substantial, it must result in a material change which may be informed by elements such as quantity and size. And taking account of the relevant matters identified in the enforcement decisions, the Tribunal found that the following aspects of use are relevant to a consideration of whether substantial intensification has occurred. They were the number of vehicles on site, the frequency of arrivals and departures to and from the site, the extended hours of operation, increasing intensity of use and levels of activity, area of land subject to use, levels of traffic and extent of material involved in the use. So with respect to those matters, Mayor, I agree that extended hours of operation could result in a substantial intensification. I don't think there's any doubt about that. That's particularly of the non-conforming use. I'm content, however, that the permit can be conditioned to take that into account. With respect to frequency of arrivals and departures to the site, I accept that an increase from 7 formal parking spaces to 12 is a significant percentage increase, but two matters arise from that. I don't think that those numbers take into account the informal parking, which we know already occurs on the site, and that number is not determined. And while even excluding that, it's a large percentage increase, it's not a substantial increase in terms of numbers, especially when what's already allowed under the zone for a permitted use. And section 9.1.1 specifically allows us to take into account that permitted use when we make our decision about 9.1.1. With respect to the increase in floor area of the building and the contribution that that might have to substantial intensification, the difficulty that I have there is that there appears to be no distinction in the report between the manufacturing space and the office and showroom space. My difficulty with that is that the intensification should really only be measured by the intensification of the non-conforming use, not the things that might be permitted under the zoning of the property regardless. The increase in floor area, therefore, does not, in my view, substantially increase the intensity for the non-conforming manufacturing use. Moving to 9.1.1A, second occurring, the question of whether there's detrimental impact on adjoining uses is one where I think legitimate concerns are raised in the report. However, not all of those concerns are reasons for Council to find that there is a detrimental impact. Starting at the bottom of page 25 in the agenda, these matters that have been raised are use type, overlooking, overshadowing, noise, built form, scale and setbacks, traffic and commercial vehicle movements. Mayor, of these, I think we'd be in error if we used use type to refuse the application alone, given the continuation of the non-conforming uses protected under the LUPA. Similarly, given the Tribunal's found that traffic and vehicle movements are matters for substantial intensification, I think we'd be in error if we made a detrimental impact decision on that basis. Overlooking, overshadowing and noise are all matters that I think can be appropriately managed by conditioning of a permit.
Time.
Could I move that Councillor Street, under the section 22 of the meeting regulations, be given another 3 minutes?
Need a seconder.
Yes, I second it.
Councillor Bastone. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Councillor Street, 3 minutes.
Thank you. With respect to the built form, Mayor, I disagree that the built form is going to impose a detrimental impact, especially when considering the condition of the building being replaced and the state of the subject site at present. I also have significant difficulty with the fact that a development that was largely very similar, with some minor setback adjustments, would be approved if it were a permitted use or may gain discretionary approval even without those setback adjustments. To clause 9.1.1b, second occurring, on the question of whether there's no detrimental impact to the amenity of the locality, I actually think that this part's relatively straightforward. The surrounding locality is not an assessment of the impact upon neighbours, because that's assessed at subclauses A and C. Amenity of the location of the locality is, in my view, a far more nebulous concept and must be weighed against the fact that the locality already has the non-conforming manufacturing use on this site, which could continue in operation for many years. I apologise for any offence that I might cause to the applicant, but I think it would be fair to say that the site borders on an eyesore as it stands. The transfer of the use to a new building is frankly a welcome addition to the locality and will likely improve amenity rather than reduce it, as will having continued access to these services in the locality in an improved form. Mayor, the remainder of the matters raised in the report with respect to the compliance of the building with the current zoning outside of the non-conforming use can be appropriately dealt with, I think, by conditions on the permit. I foreshadow that I've requested an alternate motion for approval of the application, which I thank staff for and I think adequately deals with these matters. Mayor, I want to make one final comment quickly in relation to this DA. In the assessment, there appears to be an explicit reference to and an undercurrent of strategic planning consideration. I take no issue with that, though it might not be relevant to the assessment. What I do say is this. The use can continue in its current form indefinitely, save for legislative amendment, for many years. If we were to find a way to refuse this application because there was some strategic imperative for change on the site to align with the zoning, we would at best be strategic planning by guesswork. There's no knowing what that site might be used for or whether that site might continue to be used for the non-conforming use into the future. It may be purchased and redeveloped. We simply don't know. We would be guessing. Given the old and undeniably drab condition of the buildings that exist, if there is a strategic imperative, I prefer to take the strategic win we have in getting the use transferred into a new building which improves the streetscape rather than guessing that we may do better later on.
There are no other lights on at this stage. Councillor Cordova.
Thanks very much, Mayor. And yes, so this is a really tricky one, and I've been assessing this proposal against the planning scheme and against the current zoning, and it's quite self-explanatory in the report. I would like to acknowledge the contribution of Councillor Street just then and the points that are made, that we can't predict what might be in the current spot that is the gateway to Margate. We can't make a prediction, but also that's not our responsibility tonight. I'm also cognizant that this business has been operating from the current location for 12 years and that the majority of the 42 staff that live and that work there, live and work in Kingborough, support local organisations and undoubtedly are providing an overwhelming benefit to the community. I definitely take that point and I absolutely support the local businesses in Kingborough, and it's very pleasing to see when they are thriving, and we should do all we can to support them. But in our role here as a planning authority, we have to follow the constraints of the planning scheme, and the primary issue faced by this proposal is that it's seeking to intensify a use that is currently prohibited within the local business zone of the planning scheme, and that's why I'll be supporting the planning staff's recommendations on this one. Manufacturing is a use that is suited to an industrial estate, of which there are nearby ones available. The use has the potential to cause a nuisance to nearby residents through machinery noise, hours of operation and deliveries by large vehicles. It's a good thing that businesses are expanding in our municipality. We need to support those businesses, but it's all about where the appropriate place is to support that growth in the municipality. The transfer of this existing use to part of the site closer to the adjoining residences will further exacerbate potential land use conflicts, and if allowed, the proposal would inappropriately use up land that is zoned local business which should otherwise be used for development that value adds and strengthens the business core of Margate. The proposed development is inconsistent with the local business zone purpose statements, and it's also contrary to the desired future character statement. We do have an element of strategic planning here where we need to not just be thinking about what is before us immediately, but in a broader sense, what the appropriate use is for that site and what the likely growth is of Margate and what Margate will likely look like in time. We can't predict exactly what will be there, but we do know what shouldn't be there, and something that is currently seeking to intensify a use that is currently prohibited is not the right way to go about that. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. Again, there are no further lights on, so Councillor Reet is pressing the button. That's as close as we've got. Councillor Reet.
We were just being polite, working out who
it's
was
very nice, next. Yeah.
Look, this has been a very difficult one, and I did a lot of reading on it, and then I have to say I've been very much swayed by the significant amount of work that Councillor Street has put into this, and he's got a legal background that I think that we should be very fortunate that we have his wise counsel on this, because when I started reading this and it started talking about all the different tribunal decisions and so on, it started to get very, very complicated indeed. I am of the view, like Councillor Street, that there are ways around this, and the alternative motion that we have before us shows that. I'm very much of the view that the building that is there, that is contributing to the local economy in Margate and the broader Kingborough community, isn't the most attractive building that you've ever seen. And yet we have a situation where we have 36 adjacent residents, and only one of them was concerned about this. And I was very surprised. I would have thought that there would have been more. I believe that the business has been operating in that place without any complaints, as I understand, against it for 12 years. They're now seeking to do what we want other businesses to do, and that is to upgrade their premises to add value to the local areas. And I think there was comment in somewhere that I read on this over the weekend which said that if we approve this, then there was going to be, it wasn't in keeping with the direction of the area and it would reduce the amount of land available for commercial development. Well, I think we all know the story of the large hole in the ground there that is a very viable space for commercial development in that area, and one that we do hope that is eventually done. So it's not as if there is no other area where there could be other commercial operations take place that would add further value to that Margate area. Look, it is a tricky one. This is a significant number of conditions here. But I believe with the representations that we have had from the applicant and their lawyer, and with considering the advice that Councillor Street has put together in a very structured legal argument, that I don't support this recommendation, and if there is, when the foreshadowed motion goes forward, then I will support that.
Councillor Bastone.
I too can't support this motion. When I look at Margate as I drive through it, as I've spoken to Mrs. Tyler Moore about this already briefly, and she might speak to it tonight, when we ask the businesses and say in the planning scheme, the parking has to be to the side or behind. I went through, there is not a single business in Margate that doesn't have parking in front of the building, with the exception of the dentist, whose parking is onto Beach Road. Right, so we have, perhaps this is not what the planning thing says, but we have many exceptions there. One of the new buildings that we've allowed through is the childcare centre, which is a complete parking lot in the front with very little screening done. We had a business of a restaurant convention centre almost directly opposite this business, and we allowed it to be turned back into private use. The building two up from there was a glazier business where they were constructing windows. It's now a repair shop and hire of equipment, and as a repair shop is at times quite noisy. You can hear it as you go past. The within the zoning, it says to meet the convenient needs of a local area and encourage residential use, professional and retail services. The showroom that is proposed is in fact a retail service. You can go in and buy things from them, which I have done. They sell Hafele furniture, accessories and things like this. This is not just a manufacturing area, and I think to suggest it could go in a different area, perhaps within Margate, takes away from the fact that you need the showroom accessible by the public. I think that with the alternative resolution that we have in front of us, I think that the problems that we or the problems we see here can easily be solved. And as I said, none of the other things, as Councillor Reid said, here we've got this huge hole in the ground which has sat there for some time because, according to the rules, it's substantially commenced by being knocked down, the building knocked down, and some earthworks done. So I think for once we're actually going to get a building built by a builder that enhances the area in Margate, and we haven't had that for a long time. Margate is looking down and out, so I won't be supporting this resolution at the moment.
Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, fellow councillors, for speaking. I often have to really listen when Councillor Street speaks with his knowledge and his legal background, and I was wondering if Mayor, if Planning Manager would perhaps like to make any statements in regards to some of the points that he made. I tried to write some of them down. Some of them were regarding some of the parking statements and the non-conforming floor use statements, if that is okay.
Ms. Tyler Moore, I think the question is, would you like to make a comment? So it's pretty broad.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the opportunity to respond. The application isn't that easy, and it doesn't follow the normal format that we have to do, so the 9.1 is something that we deal with differently. Interestingly, speaking to our planning lawyer, they supported our position of the refusal and deemed that the three criterion had not been met or not been satisfied in a manner that it could be supported. It was not a formal position because I'm not going to spend money on that. It was a question about definition of site and stratum. The comment about it'll make an improvement greater for the area, saying, oh, car parking's going to come off the street, that's not what the planning scheme's asking. They're not saying is there improvements on other parts. It's talking about the intensification and the impacts on the subject site, including the built form. Difference of locality and amenity of locality, as described in the later email that was sent, that albeit not being in the report, is about meeting the amenity. So the amenities of a locality, the needs and the desires of the locality, whether that be pharmacy, shops, cafes, those sorts of things. So that's what the amenity is, not necessarily not noise and other impacts about residential ones. I agree with the point that the impacts on residential amenity is covered in second A. Also agree, not very well written part of the planning scheme. Not my fault, state government. And the showroom, the point about the showroom can stay there, it's permitted use and maybe a suitable use on that site. So can the site stay there? Yes, the development can stay there and continue to operate and is protected by 9.1. We haven't suggested it's not. And can they provide a development that would meet all the criteria? Yes, they could provide a development that meets our criteria by placing a new building which would enhance the area, as suggested by councillors, and is encouraged, which we're of the same opinion, but it could go on the same location on the site, not bring it closer to the sensitive uses, not bring it closer to the road, not necessarily make it larger. But they've chosen not to do that because they want to retain the building until the last moment to take it down. But yes, it certainly could be accommodated on site, make an improved building with improved amenities for their staff and make it a more purpose-built building. There's no denying that there's probably an opportunity better for their productivity without wanting to stray into intensification of productivity on the site, because obviously that's in the criteria of 2C. And you can provide the difference of the workshop and the showroom, although it wasn't provided well on the application. We do have the existing 2010 permit that shows us the existing workshop, and the workshop and the office both increase, the office being part of the both uses, because the office is not just for the showroom, the office is for presumably people to work in there about ordering and deciding what they're going to do with the workshop. It's not limited to the showroom, so that is an intensification in both of those. And obviously separate amenities for the office end of workers and the ones that are at the rear. So I hope that provides some comment and assistance in interpretation.
Thank you. I also have not taken, you know, I've considered this over the weekend and it has weighed heavily because I do support local jobs and local businesses and expansion and want to encourage business development and expansion in our area. Margate sort of reminds me a bit of, and excuse me, Mayor, please pull me up if I'm going off out of planning authority points here, but it reminds me of sort of, you know, recently we've spent a lot of money on the Play School Central Kingston precinct and a vision for that sort of space. I do believe if Play School came and spent, you know, a vision for Margate, it would have quite a similar vision as it would be for Central Kingston. The livability, all the points, I guess, that are raised that are mentioned in, I'm just trying to find my points around that, you know, Margate Central Business Area should be further developed in a manner that provides for public improved amenity, convenience, functionality, safety and social or recreation opportunities. I do believe it's a similar vision to what Central Kingston is, and I think that's something that we really need to consider when deciding whether we support or not support this motion. We've created a bit of a hodgepodge around here. Let's not create a hodgepodge development there. Look, let's look to the vision of this character statement for Margate of what could be. I feel like everybody's, you know, deciding on where we're going to go, and at this point, the motion will not be the majority approved. But anyway, I will make a few statements in regards to things that that stood out for me. In the report, council staff have clearly stated that the business, as is permitted, to continue on site. However, it is the extension and intensification that brings into question its appropriateness and the planning authority's ability to allow its approval. The area of Margate in the planning scheme states that manufacturing is prohibited in the local business zone. As part of understanding this, I actually went door knocking on a few local businesses in different industrial zones and also in the city of Hobart who have showrooms, and quite a number of businesses sort of similar to this, manufacturing and things and building, they have their showroom and they have their manufacturing in an industrial site. And that's, I think, something that we need to consider. It doesn't make or tarnish what's happening. They don't need to manufacture everything on site. The showroom actually provides that opportunity, and they have in the industry areas and manufacturing, and that's the opportunity that can be available for this business here. I understand that is a big expense, but that's what fits into the vision of this of what we're looking at tonight. The proposal inappropriately occupies land that could be used for activation, such as dining and entertainment, and furthermore, it introduces built form of a scale that is inconsistent with the area and dominates the streetscape with its high precast panels. While it is acknowledged at the central that the business already exists, the purpose-built redevelopment intensifies its use and prolongs its likeliness of staying in situ, which is contrary to the scheme, the Southern Regional Land Use Strategy and the Kingborough Land Use Strategy, which has been adopted by Council. This afternoon, just coincidentally, I had the owner of the Italian Pantry contact me, and he talked about this vision of Margate being the, you know, a local sort of a food hub, a place where people can come on their way to Bruny Island, and it really fits that vision of what we're saying in regards to that the, sorry, the, I'm being a bit, just basically the character statement for Margate. If we really went and spoke to local businesses and talked about the vision, I think that it would be, you know, there is just so much more opportunity that we could do, and proposing something like this and saying yes to something like this just creates a bit of an ad hoc development for the future of Kingborough that I guess we have seen across the central Kingston area. And now we're having to sort of look at a bit of a mess and sort of clean things up to propose what could be. Margate has so much potential, but I don't believe that this development is in keeping and in line, and the council officers have clearly stated why it doesn't. And just on another note as well, it's not like our planning staff actually have a high number of refusals. Thank you.
Councillor Wass and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess this is a very difficult one for the reasons as you read through the report, and certainly when I read the report and knowing the property, I wasn't working along the lines of the report, because I think there are a number of circumstances that perhaps haven't been covered, and I think Councillor Street has summed it up quite well. The report says it dominates the streetscape, or it will. It won't. I mean, if you go down there and look at it now, the bottle shop dominates the streetscape for obvious reasons. This is going to meld in with the local area. It's not going to be as high, and so therefore I don't believe that to be the case. At the moment, it's a bit permitted use for what they're doing, and that could continue ad infinitum. But I think we can look at it and come to a compromise here, because they can provide a building that is more efficient and more effective. We talk about noise. There is a small engine workshop across the road. There is noise from the hotel at night. There is noise from, if you like, when we get a supermarket up the road, closer to people than perhaps what we're talking about now. We've also got other businesses in the main street adjacent and alongside that will have just as much impact as this one. I think the other issue, most importantly, is the lack of representations. There was one. The people of Margate would let you know if they oppose this. They've let us know that they don't oppose, that they support. And to my knowledge, I don't know anyone in Margate who has made a complaint or even had a reason to make a complaint against this business. And I think that supports this business continuing. They are, as I said, a permitted use, doing what they're doing where they are. I think we can come to a compromise. I think there are a number of options that we can do, which is all set out in the foreshadowed motion. And I will vote against this motion, and I will support the foreshadowed motion.
Councillor Cordova with a question.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about the pin oak tree. Why is the pin oak on the significant tree register? And a follow-up question to that is, out of the many, many trees in Kingborough, there are only 23 significant trees in all of Kingborough on that register. So am I correct in thinking that that pin oak tree is of particular significance?
Ms. Hollamore.
Through you, Mayor, I don't have on hand the citation of the pin oak tree, but the significant tree register enables trees to be nominated native and non-native species because they provide a contribution, cultural, botanical significance, environmental significance in terms of native vegetation. So it does take a bit to get on the list. To keep on the list, and we are due to, not that this is related to this planning application, to amend that and update that list. So, yes, it is significant to be accordingly listed on there.
Thanks. Do you know if there's... it looks like it's well over 100 years old. Do you have any historical information about it at all? Who put it there? Why it's there?
Ms. Tylermore.
Through you, Mayor. apologies, I don't have the citation with me available to what the significance was, but certainly on the very simple manner is about the appearance of the pin oak. It's a significant tree. It's a part of the gateway into the Margate Township. And yes, the proposal suggests to or aims to retain it, but it will result in cutting of the canopy on one side, and then you have the power lines on the other side slicing out the other side. And as the report suggests, the site is 2,200 square metres. It's more than large enough to have completely avoided the tree altogether, and that's what we're suggesting. Avoid is the first effort that should be made.
I have a question.
So Councillor Blocks, then Councillor Bastone.
A number of speakers have spoken about the fact that there's only one person who's put in a representation.
This is a question, is it, Councillor?
Yes, it's a question.
Okay.
I'm wondering whether the person putting in the representation was in fact representing a body corporate or stratum titles, or was it one individual? And is it not recognised that one individual may well raise questions which are highly relevant? And if it's one individual, or if it's one person representing a large...
Sorry, Councillor, I've... the question, if you can find it, was that was the representative or representor representing the body corporate or themselves as an individual? Ms. Tyler Moore.
The representation didn't make reference to a body corporate.
Councillor, just because we're being live streamed, councillors and most people won't be aware of the rules. Under the rules for each debate, councillors are allowed to make one contribution except for the mover, who gets to summarise at the end. What Councillor Cordova and Councillor Fox are able to do is ask questions outside of their main contribution, so that's what they're doing. Councillor Bastone's in the same position, having made a contribution, will now be confined to having to ask a question. Councillor Bastone.
My question is about the pruning that has already happened to the pin oak tree by TAS Networks. And in our statement says that it has to be done by an arborist. Do we actually have control over what TAS Networks do with their pruning? Because it's an absolute mess.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the condition requires an arborist and the planning scheme allows us to do that. TAS Networks, the works that they do is exempt from the planning scheme, so we don't have jurisdiction over them, but I don't think we should make the assumption that they don't have qualified people who deal with the trees. You would hope that they would, because they have people lined up to do this, but it's a question we'd have to follow up on later, whether they're suitably qualified to protect trees.
Thank you.
I have another question, Mayor. Thanks, Mayor. So my question is about the desired future character statement, which says key site redevelopments and Main Street improvements. This is the implementation strategy of the future character statement. Key site developments and Main Street improvements are required to improve the streetscape, pedestrian movement, traffic management and the standard of private development. And the planning officer has... in the report said that it doesn't do this. My question is there any recent precedent at all in Kingborough for allowing a development in contravention of such a clear future character statement?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, that's a big question of hundreds of applications that we deal with. I would say that it's our requirement to consider the desired future character statements in all applications, and we find that they are consistent. Obviously, the last council meeting where the council's overturned two of the decisions, there were matters that were raised that were contrary in the officer's opinion, whether they met them or not. But I can't cite specific examples of other instances that do that, but yes, it is a requirement of the scheme that it's been met.
Is it fair to say that it's highly unusual, for example?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Well, it would be highly unusual. It would be a bit worrying if we went against the desired future character statement, because we're required under the legislation to consider it. So, yes, it would be unusual and it would be unfavourable that we did it.
for my contribution, I wanted to talk about the local character, the local area objectives and the desired future character statements as well, because I disagree that this application is into contravention of those objectives. The local area objective for Margate is to provide a range of retail and community services that effectively fulfil its function within the regional activity centre. The showroom component of this application, I believe, does enhance and provide a retail, and I think it was Councillor Bastone that made that point. This does actually provide a retail function that wouldn't otherwise exist and does that more effectively than the existing use or the building that's there at the moment. And then again with the implementation strategy, the Margate Main Street is to be redeveloped in order to provide improved shopping services, access and parking, and I believe all of those are met with this application. The desired future character statements, Margate Central Business Area should be further developed in a manner that provides improved public amenity, convenience, functionality, safety, social and recreational opportunities. Again, I believe the proposal here is actually an improvement on the existing site. The implementation strategy, the key site redevelopments and Main Street improvements are required to improve the streetscape, pedestrian movement, traffic management and provide of private development. Again, I believe the application before us enhances the site in terms of its meeting those, both the future character statements and the local area objectives. It probably would be, to Councillor Midgley's contribution, look, if we were central planners, would you put this use on this site? No, we're not central planners, we're a planning authority. We don't get to direct private owners what they get to do. We have to assess their application against the scheme. So it happens that for this applicant, there is a real shortage of industrial land. They've got an existing site, and they also have provision within the planning scheme in 9.1 that allows for exactly this to happen. In my view, the way the planning scheme is written, that 9.1 is written for exactly this circumstance. And I thought Councillor Street's reading of that and description was very apt, and I have to agree with his assessment of it. So for all those reasons, I'll be voting against the resolution. Councillor Street, sum up. Sorry. Councillor Fox, apologies. Definitely owe that in. Councillor Fox, apologies, to sum up.
Well, I do appreciate the contributions around the table, but I... Other than Councillor Street, who is a professional lawyer or has acted as a lawyer, we are not professional planners around this table as councillors. We are a planning authority and we should be guided by our professional staff. What concerns me is if this motion is upheld and we refuse the development application, the developer can take our decision to the tribunal and he would have the resources to do so. But the single
Councillor
resident...
Councillor Fox, you can't bring new material into a summing up, so if it hasn't been raised already in the
debate... The single resident that I raised may not have the resources to take this matter...
No, I'm sorry, Councillor Fox, not only is it not relevant, but also hasn't been raised during the debate, so you need to stick to a summation of what's already been said.
Well, I stick with the recommendation from our professional staff. This development, even though it employs a lot of people and is obviously beneficial to Kingborough, there are very good reasons why there should not be this type of intensification of use on the site. There is a detrimental impact on the adjoining users and the amenity of the area and the future of this location in terms of development of Margate in a way that has been envisaged by the community for many years. And there would be a lost opportunity if this development were to be allowed to intensify on this site and affect the streetscape irrevocably, because it would be not just for the time being. It would be a permanent fixture that would not be allowed to be removed at a later date. And I think this is something we should all have in mind too, that it should be the long-term consideration of not only this site but the whole of Margate and what we would like to see happen in Margate. And as some councillors have mentioned, there are people with vision in Margate that who look at the planning scheme and what is allowed in some areas and what is not allowed in others. And we really need to make the most of the planning scheme and try and encourage the users that we've zoned to go in those areas and discourage the intensification of uses that we have not zoned for these areas. So I stand by my motion. Thank you.
Okay, the motion was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Midgley. And the motion is that the development application for a new manufacturing workshop, office, car parking, showroom and landscaping at 1686 Channel Highway, Margate is refused on the following grounds. And there are six grounds. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
Over division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Fox, Cordova and Midgley, and those against is Councillor Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Wass and Winter. The motion is lost. Councillor Street foreshadowed a motion to approve this DA earlier. Councillor Street, you so move?
So moved.
Ms Morton will, as a copy in, all councillors have been provided with that earlier. Now looking for a seconder of that foreshadowed motion. Councillor Bastone would like to second. For those following on at home, I don't believe they can see this on the screen, can they? Oh, they can. Excellent. There you go. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, much of what needs to be said about this foreshadowed motion I've said in my contribution on the recommended motion. There are a couple of things that I need to say about my position in relation to the foreshadowed motion, though, particularly with respect to some comments that have been made about my position on the recommended motion. In putting forward the foreshadowed motion and making the comments that I do on this and the recommended motion, I don't purport to give legal advice. I'm no longer an Australian legal practitioner, haven't been for some months. Please don't take anything that I say as advice. Anything I do say to you is simply a guy on council with too much time on his hands of an evening and some particular skills in relation to statutory interpretation and the reading of case law and some particular opinions about the interpretation of it. So please, do not take what I say as gospel. Tasha is a professional planner. That's not to say that some of the disagreements that we have aren't going to be valid. It's not to say that one or other of any of us are always going to be right, but I firmly believe that it's our job as a planning authority, whether we have the skills that I've got or not, and I'm not going to deny that I've got them, it's our job to examine every application that comes before us, examine the advice that comes before us, and decide whether we agree with it or not, and that's all that I'm doing. So, having said that, I move the foreshadowed motion. I thank staff for the foreshadowed motion because they are professional planners, and what they've done with the foreshadowed motion is a number of things that I would never be able to do, which is appropriately condition the permit so that it meets many of the concerns that I outlined in my contribution on the recommended motion. So I thank staff for that. My position on clause 9.1.1 and the assessment of the movement of the non-conforming use stands for this motion as well, and I commend the motion to council.
No lights on at the moment, so I'm about to close debate. There being no lights, and the Councillor Street has just spoken, I won't ask him to sum up. The motion was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Bastone, and it is that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for new manufacturing workshop, office, car parking, showroom and landscaping at 1686 Channel Highway, Margate, for Mr G. Corney, be approved subject to the following conditions, and there are quite a few of them, three pages from memory, 28, no, more, 31. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
Have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Midgley, Boss and Winter. And those against is Councillor Fox and Cordova. The motion is carried. Next item. The planning authority session adjourns. The open session of council recommences at 6:45 p.m. We now have a notice of motion from Councillor Westwood. It's on funding for public infrastructure required to support large subdivisions. Moved by Councillor Westwood. Would you like to move that, Councillor Westwood? Yes. And looking for a seconder, Councillor Mitchell is seconding it. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. This notice of motion calls for a report to be provided to Council to assist us in potentially considering some options to capture the value that can be earned from large-scale changes of zoning to land and large-scale subdivisions. When a significant parcel of land is changed from, say, for example, rural to residential zoning, there is a significant increase in the value of that land that is realised as that land is subdivided and each of the lots are sold, which is great, especially if it's infill development in an area that is appropriate and has appropriate infrastructure for residential dwellings. However, what happens as a side effect of that is that there are a lot more expenses that council incurs in terms of maintaining that residential area. We have a couple of examples at the moment where large-scale subdivisions have incurred an infrastructure deficit that ratepayers are now required to somehow fund. I think there's also an equity issue in that because the rates come from all across Kingborough, not just from selected new subdivisions. So someone who's living down the channel might be subsidising works that and community support that council provides to a specific new subdivision. So I guess at this stage, this is just asking for a report so that councillors can have some options to consider about different ways that we might capture that increase in value and get some help from the private sector in contributing back to the community to help support the required infrastructure for the new subdivision.
Councillor Fox.
I'm really pleased to see this motion on the table and I fully support it. I don't know if Council has a copy of a report, a similar report, which was commissioned by the then General Manager David Lovell in the early 90s on this very issue. And that report estimated that every block at that time cost Council $17,000. And we lobbied the state government to allow us to charge for community infrastructure and for contributions from developers, and we were allowed to charge $500 per block, even though it was acknowledged that our figure of $17,000 wasn't far off the mark. And that's in the 90s, early 90s. And now I understand, I might be wrong, that the state government doesn't allow us to charge anything. Is that correct?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. It's probably best answered by our Manager Development Services, I suspect.
Through you, Mayor. Apologies, I missed a little bit towards the end. Charges for developers, was that the question?
I think it's called headworks charges.
Yes.
That was the term we used, which at one stage was $500 per block, even though we estimated we were actually paying $17,000 in terms of community infrastructure towards every development block. And is it currently the case that the state government will not allow us to charge that? Through you, Mayor, I wasn't working here at that time, but I am familiar with those charges, the headworks charges, but they're actually related to sewer provision and water, because council used to be in charge of sewer and provision of water, which then went to Southern Water, which then became Taswater. So therefore, because in theory we weren't doing that, we couldn't charge the head charge for that. They did continue for a period of time to charge those headworks, but it doesn't come to council, and actually there are changes to those headworks charges as well, which is why we see a number of planning applications to amend planning permits that had those headworks charges. So, yeah, it's very limited. Obviously, the legislation has changed and the scheme has changed a lot since the 90s, the early 90s. So there are provisions in there, and the scheme and the Act is fairly weak on asking for contributions. But the report is something that we would like to do anyway. And there are, in fact, as recently as last week, two other councils were asking detail within our shared network of planners about developer contributions. So other councils are onto it too, but so perhaps if we band together, we might be able to get an outcome on that, because certainly in other jurisdictions such as Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria all have an ability to charge developers appropriately to make contributions to infrastructure and services that they need to be able to fulfil their development requirements.
Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm not going to support this motion, not because I don't believe in it, but simply I think we're putting the cart in front of the horse. I think the first step would be a workshop, because a workshop would give us an opportunity to discuss and bring in a number of issues that we've known from the past, and to put a focus on it and take in all options. I think going this way, we'll get a report, and it may not, or it may be silent in a number of issues that we would want to discuss later. So that's the only reason I'm going to vote against it, Mayor. I think we should be doing a workshop first, and this would follow second.
Councillor Cordo.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions in, I guess, a follow-up to Councillor Wass's contribution just then. Would it be possible to see the report and then have a workshop on it? I thought
yes.
So. Yeah, I thought so. Thanks. Secondly, I'm aware that there's constant resource constraints on the planning staff. So I'm just firstly, I'm just want to say that I support this motion. I think it's a great idea. But my question is just about what the opportunity cost is of diverting resources towards this, and will that come at the expense of implementation of the planning review or anything like that?
Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor. The report will probably be written by me with input from other officers. It will take a significant amount of work, because it is going to require a lot of legislation interpretation, looks at the schemes. It's going to probably deal with consultation with the other authorities such as the Planning Commission and the like. Consultation with other councils is advisable for this as well. Other resources there? Well, I couldn't be busier if I tried. I don't enjoy having to do work on Sundays and sending emails. So without the resource, I'm still very busy having to deal with day-to-day applications and work like that. So I don't know how you overcome that. But I wouldn't suggest... I mean, it could go to a consultant. It's a different bucket of money. But it's something we could do in-house, and it would take some time to do it. And I wouldn't expect it to happen too soon for all the statutory requirements we need to meet.
Councillor Meachley.
Thank you, Mayor. I also support this motion, and just in regards to a few other councillors sharing and Ms. Tyler Moore, wondering if it's something that LGAT could perhaps help or support with, if there's a few other councils looking at this also.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, yeah, I think definitely it's something that LGAT could be involved with, or certainly assist in dealing with it, because it is statewide. It's not unique to this municipality, and they have they don't have surplus resources. I know they're very busy in there as well, but they definitely have a good skill base to focus on things like this, so it is something we could seek with some assistance from LGAP, perhaps, if they're interested.
Councillor Gorder.
Thanks, Mayor. I'd just like to make my brief contribution. I thank the Deputy Mayor for bringing this motion forward, because I think I agree with the premise that Kingborough needs additional investment in infrastructure to support its growing population, and I also agree that population growth from major residential subdivisions is placing a significant financial strain on the council, and I do believe that there are answers to be had by the preparation of this report where we could get significant value out of being able to identify some of those areas where we could reduce the economic burden on council, but also enhance economic development within the municipality. So I think that there is a growing urgency to find new sources of funding, and I guess it stands to reason that when there's a significant amount of economic windfall to be had from major subdevelopments going through within the neighbourhood, it stands to reason that some of that newfound wealth could be shared more equally and could also could make efforts towards reducing economic inequality and also enhancing the services that council is able to provide. So I think there's some really valid questions here, but I take note of the concerns raised by Ms. Tyler Moore about the resourcing, and I think we just need to tread carefully because we don't want this report to come at the cost of the business of planning. However, on balance, I think that we're going to receive some real value from it, and so I will be supporting the motion. Thanks, Mayor.
Look, for my contribution, I think this has been a really... a poor area of policy for Tasmania generally when it comes to developer contributions. I think it's poorly understood by the general public that these subdivisions are actually being paid for by everyone else. They've been socialised across existing ratepayers, and for some of our new subdivisions, some of the numbers, the initial numbers that I saw with quite some time ago, showed that not only do they leave us with large infrastructure deficits, as Councillor Westwood said, but they also leave us with actually collecting less in rates than we are depreciating the new assets that we've received. So they're not actually paying for themselves, certainly not for a long time. And that's not a good situation. You also have, in terms of those of new developments, you've got a situation where Taswater, as referenced by Councillor Fox, in terms of headworks charges, Taswater hasn't been charging headworks charges for nearly 6 years, and that again socialises the cost of new development onto everyone, and it's done for sort of economic development reasons, and they make sense in the short term when you're in economic depression, but that's not the situation we've been in for 6 years. It's now a long-term policy that's been done whilst the housing construction sector is the healthiest it's ever been. So for all those reasons, I think it would be a good thing to have a look at what our options are now and also what potential options there might be through legislative change. I think this is something that LGAT would be interested in and other councils. Interestingly, LGAT at its general meeting last week resolved that it no longer supported the headworks holiday for Taswater is providing, which I thought was a very sensible resolution and one that Kingborough supported. I'm very interested in reading this report. I understand it's a lot of work and we might not see it for a while, but I think it's a substantial policy that local government in general should be very interested in, particularly us, given the situation we're in with ever more subdivisions being proposed and planned. Councillor Westwood. Thanks, Councillor Westwood. Moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Midgley. The motion is that a report be provided to Council regarding options to assist in funding the provision of public infrastructure to support large new subdivisions and rezones. The report should include, but not be limited to, and there are dot points or five dot points there. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
Over division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Cordover, Mitchell, Winter, and those against is Councillor Wass, and the motion is carried. Next item is petition still being actioned. This is on page 60. There are no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period. There is a petition containing 40 signatures be received. Oh, there's a motion about that, sorry. So there's a motion there that the petition containing 40 signatures be received and referred to the appropriate department for a report to council. Looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried. The next item is on page 61 and it's disaster relief donations policy. There's a recommendation on page 62. Anyone like to move that? Councillor Fox. Seconded by Councillor Westwood. Councillor Fox.
I think it's interesting that all these years we've had the policy of a donation and we've had disasters and there have been no claims on that donation money. And by removing this policy, it's interesting to note in the conclusion that by the non-renewal of this policy, it does not mean that council can't donate for future disasters. So I think it makes sense to not continue with this particular policy for disaster relief. So I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I strongly suspect that this disaster relief donations policy will fly through. That is the recommendation to remove it, but I'll just foreshadow now that if under some circumstance it doesn't, then I foreshadow that I will move the opposite motion, which is to renew the policy. I've given this some thought and I appreciate the staff's time in talking me through it. My initial thought was that there's no harm having some safety and some policy framework on the books, even if you don't use it. It's not clogging up the council hard drive and it's not, the weight of the paper isn't too significant. Specifically, I thought that if ever, although I don't predict it in this council, obviously because of the economic situation, but if a donation proposal ever came before the council, I think it would be helpful to have prescribed organisations be the only ones that you can donate to. For example, as it suggests in the policy, that if you were to donate to a particular council, you would have to contact that council first rather than just giving it to a local club or a friend. You would have to go through, if it's an international disaster, the prescribed organisation, whether that's the Red Cross or the national government or whatever the United Nations agency is. So I think having those protections in place are quite useful. But then again, if this policy wasn't used, for example, during the Huon bushfires, when will it be used? So I guess my first question is, are there any other unused policies on Kingborough's books?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, it's a difficult question to answer because we kind of don't know until we do a review that the policy hasn't actually been used. So I'd suggest that there's not, but potentially there could be. But bearing in mind, we do review all of our policies every 2 to 3 years, and it's unlikely that there would be policies that are just sitting there unused, but with change over time, there is the potential that policies either become obsolete or they need updating.
Thank you. A further question, Mayor. Is the staff recommendation here based on the policy being obsolete, or is it based on the policy being unused?
Mr. Jones.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I think if in times of natural disaster, the main assistance is provided by federal and state governments, and all councils receive that support there. Council does provide assistance, more of an in-kind support, and in the recent Huon bushfires and others, we were significantly involved in that. So that's really at the level that we do provide the support. At the end of the day, $10,000 is nice. Is it going to make a huge difference to another council if they've got, damages many hundreds of thousands of dollars? So the combination of all those facts and the fact that it hasn't been used in significant disaster events, which I would struggle to think of, well, hopefully there'll never be any much worse than that coming, I don't see any point in continuing the policy.
Thank you very much for that answer. I appreciate it. A further question, Mayor, is noting that I'm pointing out that there are some safeguards provided within the policy as it exists. Would there be any harm in renewing it beyond the fact that it's unused? Would there be any harm in renewing it?
Mr. Jones.
through you, Mr. Mayor. Clearly there is no harm. I mean, the policy can sit there and not be used. You asked the question whether there are any other ones like that. Who knows? But yeah, if we didn't have the policy, any proposal that was put to council, they would come to council either way, whether with or without the policy, and you'd anticipate officers' recommendations would have governance principles in the same way as this. There may be times when you do want to donate money that doesn't fit within this guidelines too, and the policy does say those can still go to council for a decision, so it makes no difference whether you've got it or not.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think to conclude my contribution, Mayor, I think it's much of a muchness. I personally feel more safe having these provisions and a framework in place to know that if it did come before the council, which is highly unlikely, at least we would have a mechanism by which to assess a potential proposal. And I'm cognizant that we wouldn't even have to apply the policy if it did come before the council anyway. So I personally feel more comfortable renewing it, but I take the point if others disagree. So that's why I'll be voting against the recommendation. Thanks, Mayor.
Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll support the recommendation. This disaster relief donations policy stemmed a number of years ago when Council did make a contribution, I think, to Queensland. And from that and in hindsight, Council shouldn't have made that donation. Since that time, there is state and federal government assistance which wasn't to that level in days gone by, and it set out action procedures and also set out to limit. But I think case by case, because there is opportunities now when areas are classified as disaster, both state and federal governments come to their aid. Certainly with the Yulin fire 2 years ago, I think now, we provided assistance there. There are a number of staff operating from the Huon Valley Council and did a mountain of work. And certainly with the fires at New Bina, I think we were also involved in that staff-wise. So from that point of view, that's the way we should go. We offer assistance that way and do whatever we can. And I think that is, in this day and age, the way we should do it. It's not necessarily money, because the other tiers of government should be there to support those. So on that basis, that we can certainly override the donations policy. I don't believe we need a policy when certainly we wouldn't be looking at it. And if we did, we could, as I said, override it if we so believe. But I think council has a different mannerism of handling disasters now, and I think it's more in line with the other two tiers of government.
Further contributions? There are no lights on at the moment. So I'll ask Councillor Fox to sum up. It's been closed. The motion moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Westwood is that council does not renew the Disaster Relief Donations Policy 3.13 as attached to this report. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Very polite. We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Street, Bastone, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Midgley, Wass and Winter, and against is Councillor Cordova. The motion is carried. Next item is the Arts Collection Policy. It starts on page 66 and there's a recommended motion on page 67. Would anyone like to move that? Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Bastone. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. The purpose of this report is to recommend to Council that the existing Arts Collection Policy be revoked and the proposed Arts Policy be endorsed. As per the endorsed Art and Culture Strategy 2019 to 2023, Council is a facilitator in Kingborough's growth as a creative region for the benefit of residents and visitors. Council no longer actively continues to acquire art for indoor display due to a lack of exhibition space and storage, and in consultation with Council's Urban Design Officer, the policy has been revised to more accurately reflect Kingborough's focus on the acquisition of art for the public realm. the new policy is attached in the agenda, and I've spoken to a few people in the arts community regarding this policy, and actually really excited that we're having this new policy for Kingborough, that it reflects current thinking in the arts, and it also that it refers to how council will look at how art will be acquired, commissioned, maintained and managed by council, that it includes public art collection, commission, temporary, ephemeral artworks, it considers public realm and built environment, and also a great key point in the policy is that it is supporting of Tasmanian artists with priority given to First Nations and Kingborough-based artists. The policy positions art as central to the ongoing development of Kingborough as a vibrant, inclusive and connected community with a strong sense of pride and local identity. I just had a couple of questions. The first one was in regards to point 5.5. Artwork collected, commissioned or acquired must meet with at least two of the following criteria. Just had a question in regards to number E, the maintenance, conservation and storing costs are viable. I'm just wondering, in regards to the point re maintenance, will we consider putting a budget aside for the maintenance or a further policy regarding this? So I'm just wondering where that sits. Often in the mention of the different public art that the future possibilities could be, sometimes one of the shortfalls in developing a new policy is regarding looking at a maintenance budget. So I'm just wondering if at all, where does this sit and have we thought about that?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we certainly have thought about it, and the issue has come up in the past when we've had various pieces of public art that have required maintenance, and often that maintenance does require some specialist attention. Our Works Depot do endeavour to undertake maintenance to the best of their abilities, but often we need to go back to the artist involved to obtain that specialist input. And to date, we haven't had a specific maintenance budget that pertains to public art. It's something that we would, in an ideal world, like to have in the future, and it is flagged within this policy that any maintenance requirement does need to be reasonable and it's taken into account as part of the acquisition. So certainly I would expect at budget time in the future that there would be a line item included within the arts budget that does relate to the maintenance of public art.
Thank you very much. That's great to hear. And just a question in regards to, so it's a great policy, but I'm wondering if at all it could be somehow graphically designed in a community-friendly doc so that the arts community could be aware of it rather than it sitting sort of in a policy format.
Mr. Smee.
It's not very, funky.
Mr. Smee, can you funk it up?
Through you, Mayor, not personally, but there are some very talented staff within this organisation who I'm no doubt could do that.
Great, thank you. So it's fantastic to have skilled staff on board looking to change things up, being progressive and looking to the future of what the arts in Kingborough can be. So I thank very much for the effort in this.
No other lights. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to lend my voice to supporting the updating of this policy and the new provisions contained herein. I think it is exciting, and it's also really important that we, even though we're in a really difficult time economically, that we remember that our cultural and environmental diversity is something that makes us special, and we should take pride in the terrific art that is created by residents of Kingborough and also is displayed within Kingborough. And I like that the broad definition of art extends beyond, that traditional concept of canvas on a wall and extends to ephemeral artworks and lighting displays and things like that. I also really appreciate that we are reflecting Kingborough's cultural and environmental diversity as well as key historic, cultural, social or geographic relevance, things of relevance, and encouraging significant artists within the community. So I think it's a good update and it's a timely update, And even though I think we tend to focus a lot on roads, rates and rubbish, there is a significant place within the council for the cultural life of our community, and it enhances all of us, and it actually enhances our sense of place and identity and brings us closer together. And at a time like this, I think, what better time to be brought closer together. So thank you to all those involved in preparing this updated policy, and I will be supporting it. Thanks, Mayor.
Councillor Fox.
I guess the other issue, I really love hearing Councillor Cordova speak in that way, but the other issue is that when we are supporting artists in our community, they are making a living, they are trying to make a living from art as well. But the art in our community also attracts visitors who in turn spend money and stay longer, and it raises our profile and it makes us more attractive to our visitors. So I think it's very valuable. Every dollar that we spend on the arts, I think it gets returned to us many times over, and that's something we should bear in mind, and apart from the fact that it makes it a nicer place for us to live. Thank you.
Sum up, Councillor Midgley. Okay, the motion moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Bastone is that Council endorse the revised arts collection policy as attached to this report. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Move on to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. It's on page 74. The motion reads that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. Looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. In accordance with the Kingborough Council Meeting Audio Recording Guidelines, the recording of the open session will now cease, and the open session of Council is adjourned.